Welcome to the Relief Pitcher Preview, a notoriously finicky position.
I think that's where you're going.
Really?
Things are notoriously finicky, yes.
They are with relief pitcher. We know it's a crazy position.
A lot of turnover.
Let's give some crazy stats out. All right, here's one. Aroldis Chapman's never had a 40-save season.
What?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Crazy.
Isn't that finicky? Heath, give me a Roberto Ozuna finicky stat.
A finicky means fussy about one's needs or requirements.
Okay,
so
it's definitely not finicky.
I'm not sure that relievers are notoriously finicky, but Roberto Ozuna was notoriously not that good in save situations last year. He had a 4.18 ERA in a save situation. In non-save situations, he was around 1.
And he has been a top 5 closer 2 straight seasons in points and top 7 in Roto.
Yeah, he needs to stop doing that because he's a really good pitcher.
Here's one more. Kenley Jansen in 2016 would have been the number 7 first baseman in points leagues. Last year, he would have been the number 6 first baseman in points leagues. And he was 202 fantasy points better than the number 6 relief pitcher in 2016 and 123.5 better than number 6 in 2017. So there's that. Scott, do you have any stats off the top of your head that you want to throw at us? Relief pitcher stats? Yeah, I know, it's totally off the
How about this? Do you know who led closers? You know who was second? Because Craig Kimbrel was first, 16.4 Ks per nine. Who was second among closers last year in K per nine?
I don't know.
Corey Knebel at 14.9. Yeah. Kenley Jansen was third, 14.4.
Okay, well, let's dive into it, guys. Let's talk relief pitcher. This is a position that, for me, has changed the most in recent years in terms of how I draft them. Feels a little more top-heavy now. I mean, you certainly can't go into your season being like, well, there are 30 teams, there are 30 closers. No problem. I'll just draft some of the, like there's going to be so much turnover. There are closer spots that are undecided.
Yep.
There are bad situations that you want to completely avoid.
So
lay out the landscape
for me. I go so far as to say half. The pitchers who we expect to close at the start of the season will not ultimately be the closers. And maybe won't even lead their team in saves. Like, it'll happen that soon.
One thing about closers / relievers that we probably include, and it goes to Scott's point, is that they're dealing with very small sample sizes.
Yeah.
Even over a full season. And we see, like, guys like Knebel. Coming into last year, he had a 4.03 ERA over 91 innings in his career.
Mm-hmm.
He had a FIP of 3.64. He hadn't been terribly unlucky. And then all of a sudden last year, he was just awesome. Same thing for a guy like Felipe Rivero. One of those two is probably going to go back to just being whatever this year.
Felipe Rivero and Corey Knebel? Well, those two guys have like tremendous stuff, and yeah, the potential, like Knebel at least is in a situation where he's on a team that should be good. He could get a 40 save season. Rivero probably a little more difficult.
I'm not even sure if they win 40 games.
The Pirates? Well, I mean, this is actually a really important point here. When you look at closers and what you're looking for, are you just looking for saves? Because, you know, the ratio stats are great, but they throw what, 70 innings, something like that, so they're not going to have that much of an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Or are you looking for elite, you know, ERA, whip, strikeouts, whatever? And then you got to consider this. There is a very strong correlation between being a bad team and not getting a lot of save chances. I looked at the last two seasons, and in 2016, 7 teams had 70 or fewer wins. 6 of them finished in the bottom 10 in save chances. In 2017, it was almost exactly the same. Sorry, I don't have it. 6 teams. So it was 5 out of also. Okay, here we go. Ready? Last two seasons, 13 teams won 70 or fewer games. 12 of them finished in the bottom 10, you know, over two seasons in save chances. So I don't want necessarily a reliever on a terrible team.
Yeah, not on a terrible team. I think if it's, you know, just kind of a bad team, slightly sub 500, they can compete in terms of save totals. But, you know, the Padres, who I think are, even with Hosmer,
I think
are potentially a 100 loss team.
I think the Pirates are worse than the Padres are, almost for sure.
I don't know. I think the Pirates have a lot of upside both in their lineup and on their pitching staff. I still see them finishing in last place in that division because there are a lot of good teams, but I don't think it'll be, you know, like we're contending for the top draft pick kind of season for the Pirates. But To answer the broader question of what I'm looking for in the closer, it kind of depends on format, because in a points league, you only have everybody only has two relief pitcher spots to fill. You need a decent save total from those two. You don't care as much about the percentages because those aren't categories. It's not like a roto league in that way, but you just need some save totals to get points. Then in a roto league, it makes a little more sense to invest in the high-end closers to help in ERA and WHIP. I don't think it's cost-effective, particularly now. I mean, Kenley Jansen, his ADP's like third round, right? It seems like those guys are getting more and more expensive.
Yeah, very beginning of the fourth round in a 12-team league.
I just want to be able to compete in saves. And you can do that, at least in a mixed league, for, you know, you don't have to invest a lot to do that. Just get three guys who you're expecting to fill the role. And not every team in a 12-team league or even in a 10-team league is going to be able to have three. So you're going to have an advantage there, you know, a quantity over quality thing going on. And, yeah, it's possible one of those guys will lose his job. It's possible maybe both at will at some point. But as pitchers lose their jobs, others are getting the job. You're still playing the waiver wire. Like, you're getting a nice head start there with three save sources, and then you're constantly feeding it over the course of the season so you never fall behind.
I'm putting far more priority on saves in a points league, like, which I think is what Scott was saying. I'm planning on taking four relievers at least, I would say, in most categories leagues. I really need these guys to help me in the ratios and to get a ton of Ks. And there are really 10 that I feel pretty confident are going to do that and will get saves for the most part.
10 guys that will help you with strikeouts and ratios and will get some saves.
I believe to know a couple of them, like I just said, Ozuna. I still think he's really good. I've got him fifth at closer, but he definitely had some problems last year. Ken Giles, I'm not saying they're safe, but that's, I feel like they're going to be able to help me in those categories. And I probably want to get two of them.
They're definitely good pitchers.
Get two of them. We want to name the 10 that you're looking, you want to get to. And this is in a categories league, you're saying.
Kenley, Kimbrel, Chapman, Giles, Ozuna, Knebel, Noble, Iglesias, Hand, Cody Allen, and Wade Davis.
Okay. Iglesias, Hand, Cody Allen, Wade Davis. This is a really tricky position because you also have to worry about guys getting traded off of bad teams. So, yeah, we'll get into that, which is why I think I just love looking at job security. You know, I want a guy with good job security that doesn't have a lot of competition in his own bullpen. I think Corey Knebel kind of does. I don't think Ozuna really does. Edwin Diaz maybe does. Some good arms there.
I think I'm moving Raisel Iglesias up again.
Why? See, that's the thing. Why do you have him so high? Because they're going to be a bad team. He doesn't get a lot of saves.
He, though, is used in a way that's different than almost all other closers. He has more five-out or more outings than other closers, which gives him more chances to accumulate saves and wins even on a bad team.
But he only had 28 saves. I mean, he's really good, Raisel Iglesias. He was the number 12 relief pitcher, taking away any starting pitcher that's eligible at RP. And I don't think there were many good ones last year. Iglesias was the number 12 RP in both points and roto, 2.49 ERA, 1.11 whip, 92 strikeouts in 76 innings, but only 28 saves. So he is an interesting case.
But I think there's a good chance the Reds are better this year.
Yes.
But I don't think there's much of a chance the Reds are in the playoff hunt. And And we've already seen chatter out there this offseason about Raisel Iglesias as a trade chip for them. So that plays into the job security aspect as well. And, yeah, I mean, job security is, I don't want to say it's everything, but it's pretty close in that role, because if you go from a guy who's getting saves to a guy not getting saves, that is the biggest swing in value you'll see in fantasy baseball. I mean, in standard mixed leagues, the guy not getting saves is close to worthless.
Yeah.
So, you know,
standard mixed points leagues.
Well, even in roto leagues, he's close to worthless, yeah, because there's so many like Tommy Canely types that you can pick off the waiver wire to pad those ratios anytime you want. Like those guys are not something you need to pay for.
And again, Tommy Canely, Iglesias has done this for a couple of years. I believe if he were to get traded to a team, I think he could be closer to Andrew Miller in his consistency than these other guys, and pitching two-inning outings.
And there's something to be said for consistency, sure, but even if it's not Tommy Canely this year, it'll be the next Tommy Canely. You know,
It's not my argument for there is not that you're not right. You are. There will be different guys that do that. because the sample sizes are so small, having a guy do that for 2 months of the season is not going to make me think, oh, I want to go grab him. He's going to do that the rest of the year. Those two innings are probably 20. Or two months are probably 20 innings.
Let's get into that a little bit later, because, you know, format is going to change which pitchers are valuable and whatnot. But Heath says he wants, in a categories league, he wants to get two of his top 10 closers because he thinks they'll give him enough saves plus great strikeout numbers, whip, ERA. So two of his top 10. Scott, how about you? Do you have any guidelines of what you're looking for on draft day at closer?
I am looking to spend as little as possible on saves because, you know, it changes if you get in like a league specific format or if you get in a huge league like a 24 team mixed league, and that scarcity, you know, a scarcity is introduced in that way. But otherwise, you can get saves for cheap. They may end up being really surprisingly good saves.
Interesting. Excuse me, but saying one guy, I mean, these are two completely different takes on the position. And like I've said on a number of shows, but if you're just tuning in to you're starting with the position previews, Scott and Heath and I and Chris and I were all in the same Roto League last year. Scott and Heath both finished in the top three or four. It was really, really close at the top. Both of them did very, very well, and they had completely different relief pitcher strategies. This was a 12-team Roto League with 9 pitcher spots, 5x5. So there are different ways to skin a cat, I guess, although we don't endorse that. We don't skin cats. We are cat lovers on this podcast. And
particularly you.
Different ways
you.
To go about
you,
I do love
you are
cats.
A cat lover.
I just want some job security. That's what I want. I don't want to go chasing the guys in these bad teams that might become closers and might not, you know, like Tyler Clippert at the end of last year, right? Wasn't he White Sox closer or something like that? Am I making that up? I think I'm making that up. Who was the?
I think maybe he was declared the closer at some point, but then maybe got one save and.
Right.
Was
I don't
want to
chase. I don't want to chase that situation.
Yeah, well,
I want job
that's
security.
An extreme, but yeah,
and, I know I went to the extremes. You know who I like a little bit? Just throw this out there. Kind of like Sean Doolittle. No hype on him. He's on a great
love Sean
team.
Doolittle.
He's on a great team. He was really good last year.
Yep. He was really good like 3 years ago when he first broke through as a closer for the Athletics, but then got hurt and kind of got bumped out of the role for a while. But yeah, tremendous strikeout to walk ratio. I think he could be great. I think the Nationals are a team that might be interested in Greg Holland. So, like, I could totally see that. Like, right. even that, there's a question of job security, at least while Holland's out there.
And they do have two setup men that are pretty good as well.
Yeah.
So, something to keep in mind.
Brandon Kinsler and Ryan Matson.
Right, exactly. All right, so let's get into it a little bit more then. And when's the earliest you'll take a relief pitcher? How about that?
So he's the one more willing to invest in the top guys, which, I mean, are Kenley Jansen and Craig Kimbrell, clearly, right? Those are they're kind of a standalone. Average draft position has them, on according to Fantasy Pros, they're going in the third round, right?
Early fourth.
Early fourth.
37th overall for Jansen and 48th overall for Kimbrell. Chapman is then almost 20 picks later.
That's 65. Too early for you, too, right?
I don't think that's necessarily. It's right in the range in Roto. And these are all, like, in points, there's no way I'm taking a closer in the fourth round. Like, I probably wouldn't take one until the seventh.
If somehow one of those guys slipped around six or seven, I could see doing it, which, you know, probably isn't going to happen. It hasn't happened yet in our mock drafting.
It'll happen in points leagues, maybe.
Well, then points league, I don't think I'd do it that early, is the thing.
Do you think there are any pitchers that are worthy of being taken? Okay. Those two probably won't make it there, right?
Right.
What if Chapman's there? What if Knebel's there? What if Ozuna's there? Would you think about them in the sixth or seventh round?
So I almost see Chapman in the same class as Kimbrell and Jansen. He obviously wasn't as good last year, but he was dealing with, I believe it was a rotator cuff issue for most of the year. Had a couple DL stints for that.
So he had, yeah. So Chapman, his first 12 appearances, he had a 0.79 ERA. Then he had two awful appearances right before going on the DL. And he comes off the DL. He's still throwing 100 miles per hour. He's not getting any swings and misses. And remember, he had complained about his workload in the postseason the year before. He had said Joe Maddon overused him. So something just wasn't right with him. But toward the end of the year, Larry Rothschild changes the grip on Chapman's fastball, and he finishes the season just on fire.
Yeah.
Doesn't give up a run in his last 11 appearances.
Yeah.
He's dominant in the playoffs. 8 innings, 1 run, 2 walks, 16 strikeouts. He's Chapman again.
Yeah, and looks totally fine.
And Chapman, old Chapman, belongs in the discussion with Kimbrell and Jansen,
yeah,
right?
It was a threesome there for, like, I don't know, the last 5-6 years, those three guys have been at the top, which is why I think analysts and you know, users are making an exception for them. Maybe not Chapman so much this year, but the other two, is because, you know, even at the top, for as much turnover as there is in this role, at the top there hasn't been. And obviously the top guys are the best guys and the most trustworthy. So it's kind of a convergence there that's making them stand out even more. But I think Chapman is right there, and the fact that he's going 20 picks behind them, you know, they're going earlier than I want them to go in the first place, so 20 picks later than that is still kind of early for me, but Chapman seems like the better value.
Yeah, I would go 5-6 turn for Chapman. I'd be pretty happy with that, and then I wouldn't take anybody else until probably the 8th round.
I mean, look, Knebel, just based on his numbers last year, he's, like Scott said, second-best strikeout rate, right?
Yeah, the walk rate was kind of high.
He does walk guys, and he had kind of an out-of-nowhere season. But, I mean, the Brewers should be pretty good. Knebel was number 4 in points, number 3 in Roto, and he didn't even start the season as the closer. So, yeah, like, he could be that good.
He is.
But it's obviously much less security.
Maybe the ADP is showing otherwise, but my experience in drafting is that he is so far behind this group. Like, I will probably have some shares in Corey Knebel this year, because I think the upside is elite. The upside is, now he's not as safe as that other group, I'll grant that, but he is one of those, he was one of those like genuine relief pitcher prospects, not a guy who just, we never heard about him until he was good, but a guy who, even when he was in the Tigers and the Rangers system, because he kept being this trade chip for all these teams, like, this guy is a potential closer someday, Corey Knebel. And then it finally happened last year. So I, you know, he's not safe like that group is, but he's safer than he could be.
And he adjusts. I think you have to worry about the walks with him. And
yep,
4.4 walks per nine in 2016, 4.7 walks per nine last year. He managed a 1.16 whip, which is not great for a reliever. They have Jacob Barnes and Josh Hader in the bullpen as well, so they're could be some fallback options, but obviously Knebel will start as the guy.
Yeah, and Barnes wasn't even really that good in the end, and Hader, they want to move to the rotation. Like, anybody, any closer has a bad week.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
any closer has a bad week, they could lose their
job. I don't think he is at particularly high risk to lose his job. I think he's at a higher risk than most to not be as good as he was last year. I mean, he won't be as good as he was last year, but to not be elite.
That's just kind of like the position. I mean, yeah. Well, do you view Chapman the same way? He's basically the same as Kimbrel and Jansen?
No. Because I don't think you just completely scoff at last year and say, oh, it was just some rotator cuff issues.
Right.
That's kind of a big deal for a guy that throws 103 miles per hour. So,
and he did lose his job last year, too.
He is a bigger risk. They've got like 17 closers that would close for everybody else.
Right.
Yeah. So legitimately five closer caliber relievers,
right,
in their bullpen. It's an amazing bullpen.
So there's certainly more risk. He's around behind those guys for me. Like I said, 5-6.
Right. Okay. Hey, I forgot to mention this, by the way. There was a lot of news over the weekend. J.D. Martinez signed last night on Tuesday, or on Monday. It's Tuesday today. Eric Hosmer signed. You want to give me like 5 words to describe your feelings on Eric Hosmer on the Padres?
Big change for him.
Oh, really?
Okay. Nah.
Not a big change for him. Small boost for like Will Myers, Margot. The guys are going to be, that lineup looked like it might be one of the worst in baseball. Now it's less terrible.
Is Myers currently outfield eligible?
Or no,
he will gain.
No,
it.
He will get it.
That
there is some sadness that Jose Perella and Hunter Renfroe, they both can't start now. And Perella, I mean, was a legit sleeper, I think, the way he performed as a starter last season. Renfro's got some power upside, but we'll see what happens there.
And J.D. Martinez of the Red Sox, 5 years, about $110 million.
The biggest thing for me is that he's going to be DHing, which is, I mean that in a good way, because his biggest issue over the years is that he can't stay on the field. Only one season with even 125 games.
Okay.
So, you know, that Nelson Cruz has become a fantasy stud at the end of his career because he overcame the health hurdle as a DH.
So these guys are going to talk about all this stuff and anything else that goes down, pace of play stuff, things like that.
I do think one thing on Martinez, I've gotten several tweets about how much does this move him up in the rankings going to Boston. I don't know that it really does. His batted ball profile suggests that he's going to lose just as many homers to deep center and right center, where Boston's really deep as he's going to gain because he's kind of a line drive type hitter anyway. A lot of balls off the monster probably.
Okay, and I mean, we had to assume that there was a pretty good chance he was going to go to Boston anyway. So on Thursday, we'll talk about this. Tomorrow we'll do our first base preview. Thursday we'll talk about all the news and notes. All right, so points leagues, head-to-head categories, roto leagues. Things change quite a bit. Let's start with a two-reliever points league where you can also throw in SPARPs, which are starting pitchers as relief pitchers. Okay, guys like Mike Minor, Stevenson. It's not the Peacock. It's not the best year for SPARPs, but it's easy. I mean, it's much easier to deal with relief pitcher in those formats. There's probably always going to be, in a 12-team league or shallower, always going to be one or two guys that you can plug in that will get you saves. They may not be that good, but yeah. Scott, I don't get this. I mean, you are the king of head-to-head points leagues. You do great every year in the podcast league, but you always wait on relief pitchers, and I'm sitting here thinking, like, man, I've had so many struggles the last couple of years because my relief pitchers haven't been good enough. I kind of want Kenley Jansen. He's like I said, he was like 200 points better than the number six relief pitcher 2 years ago. He was 123.5 points better last year. But you don't do that. You wait in the points leagues, right?
I do. And one thing that's easy to do in any head-to-head league, points league or whatever, is get caught up in the week-to-week where there might be a stretch of a month where your closer is getting you only 12 to 15 points and you see your competitor getting like a 35-40 point week from a closer. You're like, why can't I have that? Like, I drafted the wrong closer.
Why can't I have nice things?
But it's going to come at some point, unless it's like, you know, Brad Hand or one of those closers who we don't expect to get even 30 saves over a full season because their team's so bad.
So give me a couple closers you could see on your points league team.
Honestly, it's just going to depend on who falls. Like, right now I'm drafting Greg Holland a lot because nobody knows where he's going to wind up, and I know that, you know, by the time some people are listening to this, maybe it'll be decided. And I guess there's some concern he won't sign to be a closer, but that seems low probability to me, so I'm happy to take him in the later rounds. Wade Davis is falling a lot because he's pitching for Colorado. I mean, that seemed to go okay for Greg Holland last year, and Wade Davis with the curveball instead of a slider would seem to be even better equipped to handle that, so I don't think that's a problem.
In a 21-round draft, what do you think when you'd start looking at a closer? Now, look, obviously, if Kenley Jansen is there in round 6 or 7, Scott would go away from his strategy, his tried and true strategy, right?
Not in a points league.
Not in a points league? Come on,
no.
Scott White.
I go Jansen in 5, by the way.
Yeah, I think you can win that way. I'm not saying you have to do it Scott's way. I'm with you, Heath. I don't know about 5, but certainly 6, I'd be right there.
In a points league where every team's starting two relievers, I mean, the presumption is they're probably going to be one or two closers that go undrafted. So,
than that.
But by deciding you're going, I think it needs to be said, and I know this strategy does work, but by deciding you're going to just say, well, there will be closers out there, you are agreeing to sacrifice 200 to 300 points to the guys that are taking elite closers. Like
That's true.
That's the math of it. At that position, you are saying, I'm okay with being 200 or 300 points worse at this position because I'm going to be better at other places.
How much worse was Alex Colome?
Not that
Kenley
much
Jansen?
Worse. But he had 47 saves last year. Like, right. You would have had got, and you like Colome
now,
last year.
Now, part of the reason, my point is, part of the reason there's such a big gap between Jansen, Kimbrel, and everybody else is because the everybody else, particularly the best of everybody else, the Knebels, the Riveros, the Doolittles, they weren't closing all year. Somebody else was. So when that transition happens, it's not like you're just getting the points after the transition. You had somebody else plugged in getting saves before that.
Colome was still 68 points worse than Kenley Jansen, and he did that, and that was when he led the league led baseball in saves.
Yeah, it's not nothing.
He was 38 points worse than Craig Kimbrel. But yeah, you can add a 10-round discount, you know, you take that. But that's only one example, really.
If you get the very best reliever after the 10th round,
well, I don't know
fine.
That he's really the very best reliever. He had the most saves, but he didn't have such a great
which
season.
Which is why it was kind of lucky.
Right, it was lucky.
Okay, who else?
Knebel was 4, Ozuna was 5.
But he wasn't
was
there,
five.
All. He wasn't closing all year.
Ozuna would have been like a, 12th, 13th round pick last year, probably.
Ozuna was closing all year, had a lot of blown saves.
Now you're talking, Greg Holland was 6, and you're talking to 123 points worth.
So I guess the question is, like, you just have to tell us the guys that are going to do that. And then, nobody needs to take a reliever.
I know it sounds crazy, but it works for him.
I'm not criticizing him. I'm just saying, but you have to get those guys. The reason it's not working for you is you're not getting those guys.
You don't have to get those guys.
Or maybe I'm just not doing as well in the other positions as
because
Scott.
Right. Those guys will be emerging on waivers without much
demand from the rest of the league.
Right.
That's a good
point. So you, like, the closers you're drafting, the two closers you're drafting to fill that, like,
I'm probably not going to keep them
there.
I'm still
not
comfortable being weak at closer in points leagues. Like, forget about where we take Jansen. I still want to get, like, two top 14 or 15 guys, probably.
Yep.
Like, I don't want, right?
Scott wants zero top 14 or 15 guys.
No, I'll probably draft one.
Drafted at that range. You'll get top 14 or 15 guys by the end of the year.
I might draft one. Just a little bit of security built in. But the thing is, you can probably wait till round 13, 14 to draft one.
Like an Edwin Diaz or something like that you take, and then somebody later. All right, and so Heathel is willing to invest a little bit more. In a head-to-head categories league, I have talked about this a lot, with daily form, daily lineups, a lot of people playing this, very popular. Head-to-head categories, daily lineups, 12 teams. I played in this league year after year, 12 teams. Most of my bench is pitchers, and I will have probably five closers. I will have maybe one or two hitters on my bench, and I will load up on pitchers and relief pitchers especially, try to win saves. They will lower your WHIP and ERA. You can play them every day in your lineup.
Yep.
And then, you know, you can, you're not missing out on starts necessarily because you don't have to decide who I'm starting and sitting every week. You can play every starting pitcher on the day he pitches.
And in a head-to-head categories with weekly, I'm still probably going to have five relievers, maybe not five closers, but I'm still probably going to have five relievers.
Now, this is a point to bring up because Heath was just referring to categories leagues earlier when he was talking about how he wanted at least four.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of times we just go, we make the distinction points versus category, and we're kind of lumping in roto and head-to-head categories into one by saying categories leagues. But I think a relief pitcher, the distinction matters because you've been one in the past who in head-to-head categories league, Heath.
I may not take a starter.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
and you need to make sure there's not an innings minimum, obviously.
Right. If there's not an innings limit, maybe you could not take a starter. But you wouldn't do that in a roto league, right?
I will take a starter, but that little caveat of I want four relievers applies to roto as well.
We're talking season-long.
Last year in the league that Adam brings up so often, I believe I started the year with five relievers in the draft.
Okay.
And four starters.
So you're willing to, like, you're just acknowledging from the get-go, I'm not necessarily punting, but I'm going to be weak in wins and
strikeouts. The way that it worked, and it will not always work this way, but the way that it worked was around the midway point of the season, I had about 7/10 of a run advantage in ERA and 2/10 in WHIP. I was over second place. And I started streaming more two-start pitchers then. And I started catching up. I didn't get anywhere close to the top in wins and strikeouts, but I was able to make up places because the teams that are at the bottom in wins and strikeouts are going to stop playing.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be hard to pass 7th in those two categories in the second half. It won't always work out that well, but that was what happened last year.
But if you're streaming two-star pitchers, they're not the best pitchers. I mean, couldn't they end up undoing the gains you made?
I think you definitely have to manage that.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, and that's not the approach that Scott took, and they finished very similarly in the standings.
Yep.
And I wasn't that far behind, and I'm usually a three closer guy in a 12-team roto league where you have to start 9 pitchers and it's 5x5 categories. I'm usually a 6-starter, 3-closer guy, but I wouldn't mind taking a 4th closer just for the bench or for weeks where I don't love my starting pitching matchups. This was all based on a landscape where starting pitchers hitting was up last year. Starting pitchers were rough, and you look at a guy, oh, God, I don't want to put him in my lineup.
Oh, your 5th starting pitcher, especially your 6th starting pitcher, is usually going to be bad. You just hope it's a bad 2-star pitcher.
Bad. I would say it could be like Alex Cobby, right? Like, sometimes you play the matchups. And if you don't like the matchups, you go with a reliever instead. And that was a change for me. Like, I previously never would do that. I would always go with the starting pitcher. Last year I said, look, these starting pitchers aren't so good. These relievers are putting up big time, even if they're not getting saves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with a reliever. But you don't have to draft that way. You
can
always pick up
a free
agency. Yeah,
that's the thing. Like, that's kind of just you shift to that mid-season, or maybe even earlier than mid-season.
Or go reverse.
Or you could do reverse like Heath does, yeah. Like, but I would rather give my team the chance to have the highest possible upside it can. Like, just have the confidence in myself to pick up the breakout pitchers and end up with six really good starting pitchers. Like, and it probably won't happen, but it definitely won't happen if you're not drafting that way, you know?
Okay, so then let's answer these questions fairly quickly so we can do our ADP review and talk about players, basically, who we like and who we don't like. First of all, for points leagues, who are the best SPARPs? Those are the starting pitchers as relief pitchers, the starting pitchers you can put in an RP spot. Who are the best SPARPs, and when would you take them?
Well, it would be far and away Brad Peacock if we were confident he had a rotation spot. But after the Garrett Cole trade, he probably won't at the start of the season. I imagine he'll still make his share of starts as the Astros are moving in and out pitchers to preserve innings with McCullers and whomever else. So he's still up there for me. But number one for me is Mike Minor, who had a, you know, overcame shoulder issues to have a great season in relief for the Royals last year, has been a top 30 starting pitcher in fantasy in the past.
Yeah, that was 2013?
Something like that.
Yeah, 13-9, 3.21 ERA. That was all the way back in 2013.
Yep.
And he had, what, he missed two seasons?
But he's, like, I typically have, when a guy dominates in relief and then moves to the rotation, I typically have confidence he's going to be a pretty good starter. You know, maybe he won't give you the innings. Maybe he'll get hurt at some point. But while he's pitching, I'm pretty confident he's going to be good still. And in Minor's case, he's kind of already proven as a starter.
Yeah,
so he's number one.
Minor's my number two. Peacock's my number three. My favorite is Joe Musgrove. I just think he's going to get the opportunity. He's the most likely of these guys to make 33 starts this year.
Musgrove, 32. I mean, Musgrove hasn't been a good starter. As a reliever, though, 1.44 ERA, 5 walks, 31 strikeouts. But now he's going to the National League. And he's still very young. He's only been in the league 2 years.
Yep.
So you got Musgrove, you got Minor, and you got Stevenson.
Robert
and,
Stevenson.
And Peacock.
Yeah. Who's competing for a job this spring? Like, Stevenson may not make the Reds' rotation. It's not quite a situation like Peacock where you wonder how he's going to find his way back in if he doesn't. But he was pretty good down the stretch. A lot of walks. He's probably always going to have a lot of walks, but really made strides. And I think in a points league particularly where you're not so worried about the whip, Robert Stevenson could be pretty good.
Would you take like any of these guys, your favorite guy, for Heath it's Musgrove, for Scott it's Minor, over Mark Melanson?
Not that high, no.
Okay. And that's kind of probably a change because there have been better, like Danny Duffy when he was that two years ago or last year?
That was last year.
I mean,
Danny Duffy
taking,
was a SPARP.
Yeah, people were taking him in like the sixth round.
It's not as good of a crop.
There are not a lot, I don't feel like, of high upside SPARP options that are going to be starting at the beginning of the year. But there are guys like Josh Hader. I know some people are excited about Walker Buehler for the Dodgers. Jose De Leon has been a top prospect in the past that could be called up in May or June. Or could starting in July, that could be just enormous benefits of SPARPs.
I had to make a correction here. In points leagues, in my point head-to-head rankings, I have Mike Minor two spots ahead of Melanson. Now, it's different in Roto, different in categories.
And the thing is, you can kind of take a risk in points leagues because there are closers on the waiver wire.
Yep.
So if you wanted to say, oh, well, the SPARP has much more upside, then you know you can take him over a true reliever.
And one more that's really interesting that we don't ever talk about is Matt Bush. And
yeah.
He's competing for a job. He's got... has shown incredible stuff in the past, but he also, I mean, the idea of him throwing 150 innings seems pretty crazy.
All right, here we go. Fill in the blank. My favorite sleeper relief pitcher is blank. Heath.
Yes. You want me to go first?
I do.
As a sleeper. Does Brandon Morrow count?
I mean, I love it.
If we were at April 6th and Greg Holland was signed, and I was 100% certain that Brandon Morrow was the closer for the Cubs, he might be top 12 for me. As it is, I have him 18th. Now, this whole chasing Cubs, the Cubs have not been very good at providing relievers with saves. 2 years ago, it was because they won their games by too many runs and didn't give save opportunities. Last year was just a weird situation where Davis was actually good but didn't get the save opportunities. So that's a little bit of a risk, but Morrow could absolutely just have an enormous year.
Morrow had a 2.06 ERA, 9 walks, 50 strikeouts, and 43 and two-thirds, and a .92 whip. Scott, who's your favorite sleeper?
Can it be non-closers?
Yeah, and A.J. Minter.
A.J. Minter, and I'm going to kind of go dual, because it's the same situation for both. A.J. Minter for the Braves, Keone Kella for the Rangers. I think they're their respective team's best relievers, And usually that winds up with them closing at some point. I know for AJ Minter's case, that's the plan. Like, they view him as the closer of the future. And he didn't get much time last season. I think he threw, like, how many innings was it? I'll try and look it up here. But Kella, same situation. Like, they're
15 innings.
15 innings, but how many strikeouts to how many walks?
Two walks, 26 strikeouts for Minter.
Yeah, I mean, it was his fifth.
This guy Eno had a nice year, though, so
yeah,
he's
I mean,
going to have
this
to
this guy Eno's fine, but A.J. Minter's better.
Like, yeah, and Alex Claudio is somebody you've been like, he's going to lose the job in Texas.
Yeah, and the moving to Texas, Alex Claudio, kind of a ground ball specialist, not who you usually see in that role, and that typically doesn't go well over the long run. Keone Kella's numbers last year really good.
Okay. Redskins running backs, Rangers relievers. They are the same in the fact that they always change from who we think they will be preseason, or at least who they start with. Favorite breakout relief pitcher? Heath, you're starting again here.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Raisel Iglesias, and I don't even know that he's going to be a lot better than he was last year, but I do agree with Scott that the Reds will be slightly improved from what they were in 2017. I like the way – I was a little worried going into last year how they were saying they weren't going to have traditional closer roles, but I really like the way they will just bring him in the eighth inning and he's just going to close the game from the eighth. And through 76 innings last year, 78 the year before, that included a couple starts. Raisel Iglesias has top three potential.
Okay, Raisel Iglesias for Heath. How about you, Scott? Favorite breakout?
So it's probably Josh Hader, but it more because I think he's going to shift to the rotation and become the best SPARP at some point this season. So, like, if we're just going to focus on closers, I'm going to say Blake Parker. And I don't want to invest a lot in Blake Parker because Mike Socha was just so noncommittal to who his closer was all season. And I imagine since it's mostly the same cast of characters returning, it's going to be the same way this year. But Blake Parker was their best reliever last year. 2.54 ERA, 0.83 WHIP, 11.5 strikeouts per nine innings. Started emphasizing his splitter more. Just took him to another level. And he's presumed to be the closer going into the season. Again, Socha's being noncommittal. If Parker is actually the Angels' closer from start to finish, he's probably top 10.
Oh yeah, I mean, Parker, Felipe Rivero, Brad Hand. Do you see just general similarities? These guys have great numbers. But Hand and Rivero are the closers, presumably. Parker, we don't know. But if all three of them were the closers, I mean, Parker is on the best team by far. Mm-hmm. And is set up, like, yeah, I mean, he's set up to have a big year if he just is, like Scott said, is the closer from start to finish. All right, how about a bust? Scott, you can go first. Who's a bust at relief pitcher?
Alex Colome. Because not only was he, apart from the save total, not very good last year, and by not very good, I mean he averaged less than 8 strikeouts per nine, which is, in 2018, I mean, it's unheard of from a closer. It was bad even in, like, 2003, you know? So, that's not, like, the year before he had 11.3, so I don't know exactly what happened, but it's definitely concerning going into this new season. Apart from that, if the Rays are bad, if they keep doing things like DFA and Corey Dickerson.
Oh, yeah. What the hell was that all about?
Alex Colome is going to get traded for sure. And, you know, we see it all the time. A contender trades for a closer. He becomes not a closer anymore. Brandon Kinsler happened to him last year. I would guess most of the contenders, particularly if Colome is still striking out 8 batters per nine, they're going to have somebody better for the ninth inning, so he'll just be out of luck there. And,
Alex
lose all his value.
Alex Colome for Scott, and he, in ADP, Colome is, he's, well.
14th?
Okay, actually a little later than I thought, going to round 10. Who's your bust, Teeth?
I will go with Felipe Rivero. And I'm not certain that Felipe Rivero is going to be bad this year. I'm not saying that, but I am relatively certain the Pirates are going to be just awful. And I do think, like, last year he had a 1.67 ERA. He had a 3.03 xFIP. He really cut his walks down, and if he can do that again, then he's probably going to keep his ERA around an even 3. But there's a chance he's like a 3.5 guy on a team that wins 59 games.
All right, Felipe Rivero. I how are they going to be good? Like, well, they're terrible.
Look at the middle of their lineup. They still have Bell, Marte, Polanco.
Those are their best three hitters, but that is a below-average top three hitters.
Jameson Taillon, Tyler Glasnow. Like, if Tyler Glasnow breaks out, suddenly their starting rotation is...
Includes Chad Kuhl, Joe Musgrove, and Trevor Williams.
Yeah, but it also, like, you like Barb, Joe Musgrove.
Your favorite's Barb.
Jameson Taillon's already pretty good. Like, they could, I'm not saying they're going to contend for a playoff spot, but this isn't a stripped down situation where completely rebuilding the roster. They kept a lot of their core pieces.
They may not be done yet, though. Like, they make trade Josh Harrison.
Eh, who cares?
It matters.
Adam Frazier's probably better.
Like, Sean Rodriguez, Daniel Nava, Colin Moran, Jordy Mercer.
Colin Moran could be pretty good.
These are all guys that are going to get regular at-bats.
I think what I'd like from my team, if I have a closer, is 75 or more wins. I'd feel comfortable with that. You don't have to be that good. 75 or more wins, you can get a... Look, there was an example of a team that had, like, 71 wins last year. San Diego, 71 wins. They had the 10th most save chances. So it's not set in stone. There are exceptions to the rule. And Scott thinks Pittsburgh will be better than Heath and I think they will be. All right, anyway, I'm going to give you guys two names that I think are potential sleepers. I want you to know. I want you to let me know what you think. One I've already mentioned is Mark Melancon, who was pitching with a really bad forearm injury last year. He had surgery, and before that, Mark Melancon was one of the best fantasy relievers. He's not a huge strikeout guy, but he gets a lot of saves, and he keeps runs off the board. That's number one. And number two is Jairus Familia, who Dave Island said will get most of the saves for the Mets. I know that they talk
breaking rank there.
Yeah, but look, I mean, Terry Francona, so the Indians pitching coach is now the Mets manager, and he comes from a team that said, that gave us the indication that Cody Allen might not get all the saves. Cody Allen got all the saves.
Yeah.
So Familia, last year he was bad, hit a 4.38 ERA. I mentioned this on Friday's show with Chris. If you take a closer look at the game log for Familia, it was the last game before going on the DL and the first game off the DL. He was terrible in both. It really inflated his ERA. Before that, you're talking about a top five closer in both formats in each of the previous 2 years. Mm. So Melancon and Familia, like, you want to wait on closer and take two guys. Maybe Familia is like the third of three guys. I don't know if you want to be your number two closer. I think you could do worse than those guys. What do you think? Do you see sleeper appeal in Melancon and Familia?
There is. Melancon, like, my problem with him is that I never actually thought he was as good as the numbers say he was back when he was good. And so as soon as he was bad, I'm like, yeah, I told you he was bad.
Confirmation bias.
But yes, as a sleeper, sure. He could absolutely have another year where he strikes out seven batters per nine and has a 2.2 ERA. He's done it,
like,
before.
Nobody wants him. That's,
I know,
the thing.
I do.
He's so often just, man, all the closers are gone. Oh, wait, Mark Melancon's still there. So I totally get what you're saying, and I'll probably have a decent number of shares in him. Familia, I recently moved, even before Dave Island kind of said, kind of, you know, tipped the Mets' hand that Familia's the front runner there. I looked at the game. I took another look at both the game log for him and AJ Ramos and had the same takeaway. Like, okay, Familia was actually pretty good last year when he returned. So I moved him up to 24th in my relief pitcher rankings, which 12-team league, I guess, does technically make him a number two reliever. Mm-hmm. Although I wouldn't want him to be my second reliever.
Right.
So, you know, I like him more than the guys behind him, or Shane Green, Blake Treinen, Fernando Rodney. I like Familia more than all of them.
Oh, I've got Addison Reed's got to be a sleeper. This is the year that Fernando Rodney loses his job.
But why?
Because he
sucks.
We
say that every year.
I know. But I just eventually. He's old, man. He's not even young.
I hope not, because I'm invested in him now. He's my. I paid $10 for him in our AL only roto auction on Thursday.
I hope you got. I guess you didn't get Addison Reed.
Well, he went for $9. Addison Reed
did.
So no, I didn't.
All right. So we haven't even talked about Hector Neris. We haven't really talked about Brad Hand, Cody Allen, who for some reason, the Indians are the exception to the rule. Like, they are a great team that never gets save chances. It is the strangest thing. They are, like, almost always at the bottom in save opportunities. Let's get into average draft position right now. So Jansen 37th, Kimbrel 48th, Chapman 65th overall. Jansen, beginning of round four, Kimbrel end of round four, Chapman in round six. I'm going to give you guys one potential issue for each of these three players, and you just tell me how much it weighs on you. We saw what happened with Chapman last year after the heavy workload in the postseason. Kenley Jansen, pretty heavy workload in the postseason, 16 2/3. He pitched in six World Series games. He threw more than an inning five times. Does this matter to you at all?
Maybe it
not,
should.
Not five times in the World Series, five times in the postseason. Does this matter
to
you?
Maybe it should. I mean, if he's, like.
He didn't complain about it, right?
Chapman was hurt for most of last year, right? He was hurt.
Yeah.
And maybe he was hurt because he threw all those innings in the postseason. Maybe not. Like, it's just one of those things where, I'm going to use confirmation bias again. Like, when it happens, it's like, oh, this must be why it happened. But then a lot of times it doesn't happen, too. So I don't. Like, I generally don't put a lot of stock in that.
So what do you think? You're not going to, maybe a
no,
little? Maybe a
like,
little?
I'm not going to move Kimbrel ahead of him because of this. But, like, I understand where you're coming from. That's as far as I can go with it.
No, I'm not concerned.
All right. Craig Kimbrel. Alex Cora said he will use Craig Kimbrel in non-save situations. I don't think that's an insignificant development here.
Could
lower
wonder,
the save totals.
I would like to think that what this means is he's not going to be held hostage by the late inning, the game's tied, I can't use my best reliever.
Oh, yeah, that's what it means.
And so I don't necessarily think that that's going to have a huge... Like he only had 35 saves last year.
Exactly. He had 35 saves, no. And he was the number two closer. All right, so... But just keep it in mind. Aroldis Chapman, I get... we already talked about it. Yeah. The risk is baked into the ADP with him. Get it going to the sixth round for Aroldis Chapman. All right. Then we've got Corey Knebel, a few picks after Aroldis Chapman. End of round six, we have Roberto.
Way too soon.
Yeah, I agree that's too soon. That hasn't been my experience. I get Knebel like four rounds after the others. But if he's going that soon, then no.
Roberto Ozuna in round seven.
It's about right. Like mid to late round seven, I'm good with him and Giles both there.
You know, he was actually third among closers in FIP last year behind the big two, Jansen and Kimbrel. His FIP, Ozuna's FIP, was, I lost it here. It was 1.74? Yeah, 1.74. He had a lot of blown saves. Like, I think he had nine blown saves.
Well, he had an ERA over four in save situations.
Yeah, he had 10 blown saves. I guess another way to look at it, first six appearances, Ozuna had a 750 ERA. Rest of season, he had a 295 ERA, which is great.
He's good.
But last 22 games, he had a 623 ERA. Two straight years as a top five closer in points. Two straight years as top seven in Roto.
And there was some talk of an anxiety issue for him that I think he got some help for.
Oh, this is a great stat. I forgot about this. For whatever reason. Three straight seasons for Ozuna. He has been bad late in the year. Keep it in mind. Keep it in mind. I just discovered it this morning. Three straight seasons have been bad.
By late in the year, what do you mean? Like September? Last September?
It's been a little bit different each year. But it's like last 2 months.
Do you remember the start of the show where we talked about how with relievers, even over a full season?
No, this is three straight. This is a pattern.
So we're dealing with at least like 15 innings per year.
But this is a pattern. Like, this is not insignificant.
No, it's...
Sell high.
No.
On Ozuna. No, it's a pattern. All right, Edwin Diaz. So Ken Giles is not next off the board. He's not sixth. He's eighth.
Okay.
We've got Edwin Diaz, Felipe Rivero, and Ken Giles, and Cody Allen. They're all going in round eight. Edwin Diaz, Felipe Rivero, Ken Giles, Cody Allen.
That just tells me I want a lot more Ken Giles. I would much rather have him over Rivero or Edwin Diaz.
I mean, in theory, yes. But, like, when it mattered most, the Astros decided they couldn't trust Ken Giles.
Yeah, he had an 11.74 postseason ERA and lost his job. I like the fact that Gregerson's not there anymore. A little bit less competition.
Yeah. Yeah.
They could go with, they're not going to go with Davinsky. They could go with Joe Smith and go with Will Harris. Will Harris is very good.
Right. That's the thing. Like, it's not like there's, okay, well, we'll plug this other guy into the role. So, you know, maybe I shouldn't make too much of it. It's just, like, how quick are they going to be to make that hook again? Because anybody can have a bad week.
Give me your ranking of those four in round eight: Edwin Diaz, Felipe Rivero, Ken Giles, Cody Allen.
I'll go first. Giles. Diaz, no, Giles, Allen, Diaz, Rivero.
I have Giles, Rivero, obviously believing in the Pirates more than you two, Diaz, and then Allen last.
Here's the, like, Cody Allen is an awesome pitcher, year after year. He just never gets the saves. His career high is 34 saves, and he's been the primary closer for the Indians. So if he just gets a little luckier with that and he gets to 40 saves, this could be a breakout for Cody Allen.
Certainly has top five potential.
My more sensible self says it's just bad luck over and over again and ignore it. But I'm not listening to my more sensible self and when ranking Cody Allen. Like, I don't want to fall for it again.
Well, another thing that's hurt him, and I don't know what the gap is between where he's finishing and where he should be finishing, but 3 years in a row, he's got an ERA below three, and he's lost three more games than he's won. 2-5, 3-5, 3-7. You should not have a 3-7 record with a 2.94 ERA as a reliever.
It's true. All right, so we again, that round is Diaz, Felipe Rivero, Ken Giles, and Cody Allen. I think that brings us to number 10, Wade Davis, who's going in round 9, just after those four. Wade Davis, then, so the next group is Davis, Raisel Iglesias, Brad Hand, Alex Colome, Sean Doolittle. Wade Davis, Raisel Iglesias, Brad Hand, Alex Colome, Sean Doolittle.
Sean Doolittle seems totally out of rank there with those others.
Well, he should be ahead of them?
Yeah.
Wow, I've got him behind all of them.
Okay.
I was just thinking I need to move him up ahead of Colome, but I would still rather have Iglesias, Hand, and Davis.
It's worth pointing out, too, like, because it's one thing dealing with average draft position where there's, you know, mountains of data being poured in, but, you know, you're going to have one draft, and it's going to not follow ADP, of course. It's just going to be one little piece of data applied to ADP. Like, whichever of these guys falls is the one I want, really, truthfully.
Except, I really feel like Doolittle could get 10 more saves than Brad Hand or Iglesias. It wouldn't surprise me a little bit. In fact, I would probably like project him to have close to 10 more saves.
Yeah, in the case of Hand, I probably shouldn't make it an equivalency. Maybe, well, no, okay, you know what?
I'll come around on Iglesias. I will acknowledge
it's really just Hand that I'm worried
about.
I'm too
low
on that. Because the Padres won 71 games last year, right?
And had the 12th most save opportunities.
Right. The run differential, their Pythagorean win-loss record had them going 59 and 103. So, like, they exceeding that by 12 wins is unheard of. So they got really lucky there. And they do have Hosmer now, so I don't know. Maybe he's worth three extra wins. I don't know.
And I would My expectation is young players generally get better. So I would expect that Margot and Renfro will be worth more than they were last year.
If Renfro plays, which he may not.
People are high on Margot. Right?
Like, the thing about the Padres is they're a rebuilding team, but they're a rebuilding team who isn't anywhere close to introducing
their
real talent yet.
Probably in the best division in baseball.
Yeah.
If not the best, like they're in a very good division. We can argue about that.
They're in a very good division. I am very conflicted about that division because I'm not sure how good the Diamondbacks are anymore.
Why? They should be good.
Nobody knows what to
their
expect from the Diamondbacks
be
anymore. They're going to have great pitching. Yes.
Maybe.
There's probably not a bad team other than the Padres. Maybe depends how you feel about the Giants. But all right, let's move on so we can talk about more closers here. After Sean Doolittle in round 11, Hector Neris in round 13. And the Phillies should be better. You got Greg Holland in round 13. You got Arodis Vizcaino in round 13. So Neris, Holland, Vizcaino. What do you think about that trio?
Vizcaino is way too early.
Yeah. Well, he's the worst of the three because I think he has the least job. Well, I can't say that with Holland inside, right? Yeah. Assuming Holland signs to be a closer, I think Vizcaino has the worst job security of the three. I actually feel really good about Neris. Like, I think... I guess they signed Tommy Hunter in the offseason. That's the biggest threat for Neris.
And Pat Neshek.
Well, they spent most of last year letting bad pitchers be closers.
With Hunter, Neshek, and Neris, they've got a pretty solid back.
Letting bad pitchers be closers? Neris was their closer.
He wasn't their closer the entire year. We had to wait until, what was it? How late was it when he became the closer?
How many saves did he end up with? He had 19 after the All-Star break.
He had 26. So maybe it was maybe it wasn't
early.
As long as I thought.
Now there was for a stretch of the season where he himself appeared to be on thin ice because the splitter just wasn't doing what it did the year before.
Well, who started the year as their closer?
Was it Gomez? Yeah,
Wall?
It may have been Jeanmar Gomez. Yeah,
Jeanmar Gomez.
Yeah. All right, it doesn't matter.
Okay,
he's in a better spot. They should be better, right?
Yeah, and I think he's established himself in that role. Like, it's not a situation where would they. Like, last year we were asking, would the Phillies let him do that, knowing it's going to inflate his value, his arbitration value down the road? Like, that ship has sailed. So, I think he's fine.
Here's the only thing I'll say about Neris. His last 3 years, his FIP has been 4.72, 3.30, and 3.71. That's his whip was 1.26 last year. That's not an elite closer. He walks more than three batters per nine, and his strikeout numbers are just
Yeah, he's
good.
Not an elite closer.
Yeah.
He's not an elite closer.
And then...
But
so
he's
you
pumped.
Could so you could wait. You could take Melanson and Familia over him. Would you do that?
I would take. I don't like Melanson all that much, and I would take him over Neris.
Would you take Familia over Neris?
No.
Would you take Brandon Morrow over Neris?
For now, I have Neris the highest of this group. Morrow, I think, would be better if he is for sure the closer. And again, I know this is like not interesting, but you know, I'll let somebody else take Neris to take Melanson, sure.
Yeah.
Or I'll let somebody else take Melanson to take Neris.
That's about tiering players. It's February 20th, by the way, so we're going to have more clarity when people are actually drafting. I mean, like Blake Parker goes much later than Hector Neris and Arodis Vizcaino. If we find out tomorrow Blake Parker is the closer, he's probably going to go before those guys.
And I would also say, a name we haven't mentioned yet, and I don't know where we get to him in ADP, because it changes depending. Like Scott's approach, I don't know that he has as much value as he does with my approach, but I would take Andrew Miller over Neris.
I mean, that just strictly depends on how much you need saves, right? Like, who do you have on your team already?
Right.
If you don't have any saves, I don't think you can take Andrew Miller over Neris.
If you're going, well, unless you're just going to punt saves,
like,
which you can't do.
Yeah, I don't do the Andrew Miller thing, because, like it's one thing if it's an AL-only league and you really need the security of those numbers that he's going to provide, but that's what you're paying for, is security, because there are going to be other relievers who do similar things. Maybe not quite as good, but close
enough.
I don't think
similar
is the right word.
There's going to
be a Swarzak, going to be a Kainley, there's going to be a Chad Green, like whoever.
Andrew Miller, though, is, I mean, this isn't a great way to draft, but just a little plus for him. He is one injury away from arguably being the best closer in baseball, probably second behind.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Behind Jansen. All right. So other guys here, we'll go overboard if we have to, but let's try to wrap it up in the next 5 minutes. All right, round 13 was Neris, Holland, Vizcaino. After that, we have Melanson, Familia. The round doesn't really matter at this point anymore. Kelvin Herrera, Brandon Morrow, Archie Bradley. Have not mentioned him. That was a mistake on my part. So Familia, Kelvin Herrera, Melanson, Brandon Morrow, Archie Bradley, Blake Treinen. It's an interesting group there.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want? Who do you want to avoid?
I mean, in theory, I want Archie Bradley, but there's, like, apparently he's in a closer competition with Brad Boxberger, among others. And
LOL?
What?
Isn't that just like funny?
No, I don't think so, because it's kind of another Josh Hader situation where I think eventually the plan is to move Bradley back to the rotation, and it's harder to do that when he's established as your closer. So, I mean, Brad Boxberger's been an all-star closer in the past. He was pretty good when he was healthy last season, so that's I don't think it's LOL.
I don't feel near as confident as everyone else seems to that Archie Bradley's going to be the Diamondbacks closer.
All right, so then Boxberger has to be a sleeper.
Yeah, he is. I mean, on the deeper end, because you don't have much reason to own him if he's not, but yeah, sure.
Do you want Blake Treinen?
He's a guy I would draft as my third closer in a roto league.
Yeah, I think the best way to say it is Blake is not someone you're trying to get. He's just someone you end up with.
Do you want Kelvin Herrera?
Not at all.
Not particularly.
Why are we so down on him? Didn't he just have like one bad year? He's pretty elite closer, elite pitcher
before
that.
He is maybe the most likely reliever to be traded if he's good. If he's bad, then he's just awful. And if he's good, he's going to be traded.
And I shouldn't say not at all. Like, if I can get him for a dollar or two in a roto league as my third closer again, I would do it. But yeah, like, there's questions about his performance. There's questions about how bad the team, like, he could be on one of those Padres teams.
Pirates teams.
Whatever you wanted to use as the standard for bad, that could be the Royals this
week. I would say, like, performance-wise, I expect he'll be better than he was last year.
We all seem to want some shares of Brandon Morrow, right?
Yeah.
We'll wait and see how that plays out.
I'm about 80% confident he's going to be the Cubs closer.
Yeah, and you could always get two guys. You could take him and Carl Edwards Jr. maybe, or C-Sheck. Brad Brock's interesting, because there's no guarantee that we're going to get there's no guarantee about Zach Britton anymore. And he's out for, what, at least the first 2 months of the season?
Something like that.
Brad Brock's good.
Yeah.
So he's interesting.
I think I like Brock better than Vizcaino or Familia.
Do you like Brock better than Blake Parker?
I do.
Really?
Well, there's certainly...
I mean, if
like,
he keeps the job
in the
all
short
year,
term,
yeah.
There's more assurance that he's going to be getting saves.
So the shallower the league, I think the more likely you should be to take Brad Brock. That's my take on it. Because if Britton does come back and you have to drop Brock, then you pick someone else up.
Yeah, that's fair.
But 2 months from now, there's going to be multiple closers you could have picked up by then. Like over the next 2 months, there are going to be probably 7 or 8 closers you could pick up. I'm not too worried about if I lose them, even in a deep league. Maybe only 3 or 4.
Anyone else we have to get to? I mean, I keep mentioning Parker. Then there's like Fernando Rodney, then Betances, Shane Green. Like,
where was Andrew Miller?
He's in there. I'm sorry. He's after Brock, and he's in between Brock and Parker.
Luke Gregerson looks like the Cardinals closer right now.
Thank you. How did I miss that?
That's stated that he's the guy they're looking to for saves. Now, I'm not ruling them out for the Holland sweepstakes. And even if Gregerson is the closer, like, it's another situation. I think Tyler Lyons is better. I think John Brebbia may be better. Like, I don't know that he'd necessarily be the best reliever in that bullpen. So I'm not investing a lot in Gregerson.
And there's a very thinly sourced but exciting rumor out there that Alex Reyes could be a closer this year.
All right.
For the Cardinals.
All right, let's sum it up what we talked about in 20 seconds.
Scott and I disagree completely about relievers.
Basically. which is honestly productive because it tells you there are different ways to go about this. Do what makes you comfortable. And certainly understand how much you value the saves category, because this is a relief pitcher preview, not a closer preview. Okay, I mean, like, you can take Andrew Miller if you want to not necessarily punt saves, but not need to win the category.
Well, going back to the way you started it out, this is a notoriously capricious position.
Better than finicky.
Yeah, notoriously capricious position. So rather than be at the mercy of that, steer into it. Take advantage of how it's going to be capricious, how guys are going to be losing their jobs left and right, and put yourself in a position not to suffer from it by investing too much in a guy who loses his job, but to benefit.
Or if you don't want to stress, go get a couple of guys that aren't going to lose their job and just have great closers all year.
I wouldn't mind having two top, like, 15 to 17 closers. Like, I wouldn't mind having Ken Giles and even Mark Melancon. Even though that's risky, maybe a little bit better than that. If I have Ken Giles,
I wouldn't either.
If I have
I wouldn't either. I just don't want to pay for the top 4 or 5.
Okay.
You know?
If I have Giles, Melancon, and Morrow, I think I'd be happy with that.
And then
just be active on waivers.
Probably going to pay too much for Giles, but otherwise I agree with you. Maybe like Doolittle and those other two.
All right, good. We're Doolittle fans right now. Let's just get Greg Holland somewhere else and free Sean Doolittle. Thanks for listening, everybody. Tomorrow, back with our first base preview. Then we'll give you the news on Thursday. Then we'll come back with second base on Friday. Have a good one. See ya.